The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio all across America. 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning.
What I meant to say was... Sorry.
What?
No, I'm just going over the president's correction.
Well, no, I wanted to do the story that you and I had mentioned during our pre-show meeting. I just don't want to miss not doing it.
Okay.
MGM Resorts International has sued hundreds of the victims of the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history in a bid to avoid liability for the gunfire that rained down from its Mandalay Bay casino resort in Las Vegas. The company argues in lawsuits filed in Nevada, California, New York, and other states this week and last week that it is no liability of any kind to survivors or families of the slain victims under a federal law enacted after the September 11th terrorist attacks. The lawsuits target victims who have sued the company and voluntarily dismissed their claims or have threatened to sue after the gunman shattered the windows of his Mandalay Bay suite and fired on a crowd gathered below for a country music festival.
Yeah.
And you and I looked at that and said, was there another way? Because the publicity they're going to get from this is not going to be good.
Well, I mean, this action here and saying, you know, in this suit that basically claiming we have no liability, you know, that's kind of what civil suits are about, is determining whether or not they did. So I honestly don't, I'm not saying that they shouldn't defend themselves in court. That's what any company is going to do. But then you go back and look at it and say, okay, what is the better play? What is it that you know, in terms of the, because I don't know how many lawsuits are there total now in effect, and there could be more, but there are a number of lawsuits in regards to that shooting.
They say hundreds.
Involving, you know, MGM. So, and there could be more. Now, there could be, and I don't know, could there be a settlement situation where they say, you know, we'll get with all of the victims in the case and we'll look to kind of settle this? I have no idea, but this approach doesn't seem to me to be well thought out.
From the Washington Examiner, they talked to Brian Claypool, an attorney who was at the music festival during the shooting, called the lawsuits a hypocritical maneuver that will turn into a public relations nightmare for MGM. We collectively view this as a bullying tactic to intimidate the survivors who are rightfully seeking social change and redress through the litigation process, said Claypool, who represents dozens of victims.
Well, because
of course that's going to be his response.
Well, sure, yeah, that's. But if you look at it, I mean, that's kind of the process, right? Is that each of these victims, those that are suing MGM, they're looking to determine, and, you know, through the courts, what liability, if any, MGM has. They believe that there was liability on their part. That's the whole point of those victims suing MGM. But I don't know how you get around this the public relations nightmare of this, because the headline is MGM sues victims.
Yep.
I just don't know any way around this being bad for them. It just does not look good. It's, and whether they had liability in each case is different, right? So, well, we believe that you had liability because of this and this. And there could be, you know, like this lawyer represents, what, 12 of the victims? But yes, each of the cases, each of the lawsuits, you know, could be making separate points, right? And that gets back to the facts in the case and what security did or didn't do, their own security, the hotel security, the resort security. You know, did they, were they negligent in any way? You know, and that is determined through the process. And I just don't know. I just don't know how you get around the bad publicity part of this. There's just, that's just not going to work for you, because I don't know how you put a number on that kind of bad publicity. You know, I mean, Vegas is and was before that incident having trouble attracting tourists. It's not like it used to be. And any given resort out there, you have to, you know, work for market share. It's what business is all about. The last thing you want is a headline saying you're suing the victims of the biggest deadly shooting of our time. I don't know how you get around that bad publicity. It's not to say, again, that they're liable in any of the ways that any of the lawsuits claim. That's to be determined through the process. And, or any kind of settlement agreement that they, you know, come to, that's between those parties and MGM.
And we had gone through everything that had happened in the days before that video came out. I think we discussed it on the air a few months back. Remember the video that showed, you know, it was basically the timeline of how many times he came in and out. I mean, it was horrible to watch because it was just haunting.
Yeah.
But it went through probably the week before, and everything, you know, it showed him coming in the car, unloading all the different camera, camera angles. And that's, you know, that's one of the things. Well, how could you not be suspicious with somebody bringing in so many suitcases? Well, there's different shifts and different people doing it. And nobody had ever done anything like this before.
Well, it is the convention capital of the world. I mean, you could argue that it's the convention capital of the world. And, and there are plenty of conventions that come and go. And
we talked about being in this business and the conventions that we have done and what you have to travel with sometimes. And sometimes in your, especially the promotions people that work in the broadcasting business, the things that they carry into a hotel room, you would think that they were, you know, with all the different tents and everything else, you know, that the way that they look, you'd think they'd be bringing in rocket launchers they could look like.
Well, I was
from some
fact,
of the boxes
was,
that you bring in.
I think the last convention that I attended there was October 2012, and I actually at MGM, I stayed at MGM. And, you know, those resorts, all of those resorts now, you don't have to go to the convention center in Vegas. You know, to have your convention.
Right.
They're all set up to have their own conventions on site. And so you're going to see a lot of that. And what the policy is going to be, you know, and how it's going to change is, you know, that's going to be up to those resorts and what they feel they need to do. We talked about it after, in the days and weeks after the shooting. All right, what do? Are you going to X-ray luggage? You don't, keep in mind, your guests that come in, you know, that's their living quarters.
Well, and
for the
what
next
is
few days at
what
least.
Is the in a civil court? Because what, you know, if you try to file a wrongful death suit, well, you weren't immediately involved in any of the killings. So what you have to sue them on is negligence.
Mm-hmm.
What is negligence in a situation like this, in a horrific mass murder attack that was completely unexpected to that kind of degree?
Right.
You know, from a hotel room, it's almost, you know, we look at it now when we fly in an airplane. And if you didn't have now after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have the reinforced doors, if you didn't have the policies that they now, you know, have, you know, when you're on an airplane and everything you're supposed to do, if an airline just ignored all of those things,
mm-hmm.
well, yeah, after you know something like this is going to happen. Because remember, before there were no reinforced doors because nobody ever thought that anyone would attempt to commit a suicide terrorist attack.
Well, and we take our shoes off because of Richard Reed.
Exactly. So all these things that happened afterwards, now if you're an airline and you didn't go through that process, even though by law you have to because it's really mm-hmm. the shoes, the TSA. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't do it, let's say it hadn't begun and you didn't do it, then you could say after, mm-hmm. well, no, it was well known that this is what the bad people are trying to do. Right. So if you don't prevent it, it's negligence. But how do you prove negligence when you are following the standard security procedure that every other hotel in Las Vegas, because I don't know how you can compare Las Vegas to any other town in the United States.
Right.
You know, you can't look at, you know, how you would treat somebody in Vegas who is a regular customer as you treat somebody in a normal hotel in Arlington, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a completely different ballgame. But if you're following the protocol, security, the rules and regulations that every other hotel abides by, how do you find negligence?
Well, and that's the question, too. And then, like, on-site security response time, they'll go into all of the information and evidence that the police have. And that's what they'll try again to show anyone making that claim that they were negligent or that because if you look at, we'll just focus on for a moment the vantage point, right? That situation of him essentially, you know, having that vantage point over that venue and that crowded venue. And whose fault is it for not, I guess, creating any kind of barrier or whatever it would be? But who would have known to do that? I mean, how many open air venues are there in the United States in general? Well, there's a lot of them more of them these days in Vegas and other towns like Vegas because they host these festivals, these country music festivals or rock festivals, whatever they are. It is a popular thing to do. Nobody would have thought about it then. And so I'm sure while they're rethinking it now, how do you get to that point of negligence?
Right.
And we don't know what information those lawyers have or the points in each or any of these individual lawsuits or the claims.
It's more questioning how do you figure out negligence? Now, there are many cases that the precedent, you know, has been been set.
Right.
You're on your cell phone, you get into an accident. Sorry, you shouldn't have been on your cell phone.
Right.
You were doing something else and weren't paying attention. Sorry, that's negligent.
Mm-hmm.
You had a couple of cocktails, got in the car and hit somebody. It's negligence.
Right.
You know, but these are things that happen where you have a normal precedent in civil litigation that's mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about something that's completely new and unexpected, how do you hold somebody financially responsible for that? Those are the questions I have, especially when somebody finds a new or unusual way to kill people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Besides their liability, how do you prove other liability? For example, easy to prove liability if one of the employees said, oh, yeah, we knew he was bringing all those guns up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we knew there were guns. And you never checked. At that point, you probably could convince a jury there's some liability.
And did the attorneys, through their own investigators, find that some of the employees right. of the resort? We don't know. We're just asking questions.
Right,
because
right.
if they were aware or employees were aware or management.
Or suspected.
Or security.
Right.
Yes. Was aware or suspected that he might have a great number of high-powered weapons in that room, then there's going to be a huge, I think, issue with that.
Right.
And that MGM, in that case, could certainly, it's possible they could be found liable. But again, that gets back to the nature of any of these cases. Keep in mind the burden of proof in a civil setting is different than criminal
yes.
court,
mm-hmm.
But it is... again, you still have to show that. You have to demonstrate that. This move by MGM just is not going to play out well in terms of the publicity surrounding it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Trying to get through the hot summer months with a broken AC system can be miserable and completely unnecessary. With the help of pre-trip inspections and common warning signs, you'll know if your AC system is starting to fail. When your AC starts to die out and problems start occurring internally, your truck will let you know. Pay attention to the following signs that may indicate your AC system needs to be serviced. The air your AC is blowing out is only slightly cooler than the exterior air. Your engine doesn't heat up quickly, nor at all. The air smells musty of mold or mildew. Your heater blows cold air while your AC blows warm air. Knowing these warning signs can help you avoid getting sidelined by a broken AC system this summer.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Rod in Plymouth, Michigan. Rod, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. You know, Stephen Paddock's that mass murder, that was not a random domestic terrorist attack. He had frequented the MGM Barclay a lot, and he was there for nearly a year as a high spender, one of these whales. Here's the thing. It's going to be very difficult to prove negligence because of that after 9/11 terrorist attack act. However, right. This is more about addiction, and that is what these lawyers for civil defense here, that's what they are going to have to prove. And one other thing that people are not even aware of, and you may not believe me, but you will find out eventually, and that is that these machines can be shut down, and they are programmed.
Okay, but let's. We're getting away from. I want to get to your theory that the lawyers are looking that would the civil case be negligence because he was addicted to gambling because of the MGM, and if he wasn't addicted to gambling, he wouldn't have had access to that hotel room because he was a frequent and well-known customer there, that's going to be their angle?
I believe so. Hmm. I believe the MGM is starting to play hardball up front because they have to start eliminating the different possibilities such as negligence. I think negligence, just because they didn't have the security, is going to be difficult. But I believe it's the negligence because he, in fact, became addicted and then found out he was not going to win his money back. He was a very analytical and a software programmer.
All right, but the security for what? There wasn't security to stop the shooting, or the security, they didn't have the security to know what was in all those suitcases?
Well, primarily to know what's in all the suitcases. Secondary, okay. And that's going to be difficult to prove that they could ever know.
But I don't know. If the normal cultural precedent is no hotels ever check what is inside of a suitcase. How can you would have to convince a jury that in this case it is negligence because, and I don't know what the because is.
Yep, you're right.
And so
the angle is going to come down to the addiction part of it, and that's going to prove some other things, and we'll see.
Well, there are plenty of high rollers in Vegas over the years, and you might even be able to show that they're addicted to gambling and they have a gambling problem and they've lost a ton of money, but they don't commit mass murder.
Well, if you lose a bunch of money in Vegas and you go out and murder somebody, is the casino just because you've lost money, are they liable? No.
They scare people. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley, 866-90-RUD-EYE. I don't know what story I want to do first. Let's do your story first. I don't want to do
Which story?
The story you told me about the about the internet.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's
climate change going to kill the internet.
Yeah, there's some people that want you to know that your internet could be done in 15 years. No more internet.
I did see that headline. I didn't read the story, though. Was that because of...
Yeah,
is that global warming?
It's in fact, it's a new study. Researchers at the University of Wisconsin at Madison and the University of Oregon found that thousands of miles of buried fiber optic cable are at risk of drowning under the rising seas. Now, they're saying not like, 100 or 200 years. 15 years, they're saying. So what they're saying is the peer-reviewed study combined data from the Internet Atlas, the map that keeps track of the physical internet, and projections of sea level incursion from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. It found more than 4,000 miles of the conduit that carries the internet to much of the U.S. could be exposed to seawater by 2033. While the buried fiber optic cables are designed to be water resistant, they are not waterproof. And that means, of course, the potential that many people could be without the interwebs.
One of the reasons I don't want to die is I want to be around for the continuation of all these time spans that the left gives of when doom is going to hit us.
It's already here.
For example, I was able to be around for the for 2013, which was one of Al Gore's predictions, right?
Yeah.
Was it 2013?
Mm-hmm.
That the polar ice caps were supposed to be melted?
I think it was 2009. They pushed it back to 2013. I think the new one is 2019.
Oh, is it 2019 now?
January 1st.
All right. Well, they keep pushing it back, but I'm always happy to be alive to be able to report on it.
Right.
See, I don't have much more to live for except being able to report when those deadlines pass. Well, we're still here.
Yeah. Well, by the way, they say that the most susceptible networks are CenturyLink, AT&T, and a couple of others.
There goes
Baldwin. The highest risk of losing internet areas in terms of the geographical area of the U.S., New York, Miami, and Seattle. Why Seattle and not other parts of, Washington State? I'm just asking questions. Miami, again, they're just, obviously, it's
right, they
it's
hit the they hit my provider, so I could be hit, but if it's 2033,
mm-hmm,
it's okay, because I won't be able to collect Social Security anymore, because it will be gone, and so why do I won't be able to afford the internet to begin with. And if I can't have the internet in 2033, and I am retired at the time, let's say hypothetically I am, well, then if I can't have the internet and I don't have Social Security, I might as well be dead.
Well,
somebody's going to take me seriously out there. Do you need help, Gary? Are you okay?
Well, here's the thing. The IRS has been paying electronically for a long, long time without the internet. Even if there is Social Security.
There's not going to be any.
There's not going to be Social Security.
There's not going to be any problem at all. The internet's going to be fine because everybody will be paying online. The IRS will make sure that there is no interruption in service. If that, by 2033, they'll be collecting all taxes through the internet. So the internet is fine.
Here's the thing.
Forget about all of our worries. It's fine.
Is this made up by the federal government? The Social Security Administration? See, it just happens to be, oh, I don't know, 2033? When they say it's going to run out?
Well, I think it's 2034, but it's
yeah,
the last
well, year. But see, if the interwebs is
but,
gone.
But close enough.
If you don't have your inner Googles, nobody's getting paid. They could go, oh, no, we fixed it. Oops, no internet. Sorry, can't get paid.
You don't get your Social Security.
Sorry.
Well, then I can't pay my taxes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. When I'm around in 2033 and retired,
well,
maybe. We're not sure yet. I might not be retired.
In the year 2525.
In the year 2033.
Yeah.
If there's still a Hillary. No, but in 2033.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what I was going to say.
I have no idea. What happens to all my Bitcoins? In 2033. Look, the government approves Bitcoins for everything in 2032. Oh, I don't know. No, we don't have. There is no currency, no physical currency anymore. It's all Bitcoins. Then the internet crashes.
But you think about it, by that time, will there even be a post office? Will anybody be mailing anything? Will anybody be using checks and mailing in 15 years?
Oh, I don't know.
Now, remember, what in 15 years, automobiles will be outlawed. Remember that one automobile
writer
wrote that about 6 months ago?
Right.
That by 2030, and that would be 15 years from now, all automobiles will be outlawed in the United States.
Right. Well, they'll have
to.
I think
that guy was so full of.
I think there's going to have to be. The post office, because there's definitely still going to be junk mail. I'm convinced of that. How are you going to get all the junk mail to the people?
You know, we always hear the fact that radio is still around. Because remember,
I don't think it is, though.
Radio was supposed to be gone. I mean, the predictions of radio's demise mm-hmm. had to start in the late 40s when they knew television was coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Radio's going to be gone because television's coming.
Well, I think it started in 1923. It's like, we're a year into this. It's not going to work out. I don't think so. I think it'll, you know, maybe it's a fad.
Yeah, that's right. And that, and probably some of those broadcasts were over our great affiliate, KDKA.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, before, you know, they were one of the first.
No, WBAP.
WBAP, one of the, that's why WBAP on the... from where we broadcast, well, actually, we don't broadcast from their studios, but they've been our flagship. We both worked there for years.
Mm-hmm.
They were before the Telecommunications Act of 1936, which means they were on the west side of the Mississippi, but they could still use W. And then KDKA, the same thing.
Our parent company, by the way, an employee of our parent company challenged me on that one time. I took my kids to Disney World when we were owned by Disney.
Yeah.
And I had to go to this office to get a pass thing. And the guy says, well, where do you work? I said, WBAP radio. Where's that? In Dallas. No, because it's west of the Mississippi. I said, yes, because it's an original station from 1922. And he didn't believe me. He had to actually call corporate to...
You're kidding.
Double check it. No.
And he actually called corporate?
Yeah, well, he had to call corporate to make sure that I was an employee. I had to give him my ID and everything. And then he came back, and he was all huffy about it. Dude, I didn't... I'm not trying to ruin your day here. I just want to take my kids...
I guess my point is the early days of, you know, of radio where they, you know, how long was it before they were saying, well, this TV thing's coming along and radio will be gone. And mm-hmm. we know by the late 1940s they were saying that.
Yeah.
And then in the 1950s when television came about, by the 60s they're like, radio's going to be gone.
Oh, sure.
In 10 years. In the 70s, when I got into radio in the late 70s, and I was only in for a year and then got out and did other stuff and then kept back in 83, but there was as much criticism that radio is an antiquated medium back then, and that was 41 years ago that mm-hmm. I got in.
Yeah.
And it's still, you know, one of the top mediums for attracting people.
Oh yeah.
And so I guess when you look at that, if radio hasn't gone, and a lot of other things will probably go away, but radio will probably still be around in some form, but junk mail. Mm-hmm. That's the point I'm trying to make. Will junk mail never go away?
Because I assume that,
and I don't know how much junk mail I get now compared to what I got 15 years ago, mm-hmm. before the internet really came about. Because all of the junk that we get on email, mm-hmm. the trash bin, mm-hmm. well, that's the other point. It's not as effective.
Right.
Because I can put it right, you know, I become spam, boom, I never even see it. Mm-hmm. It's tough if it's still in your mailbox, you still have to pull it out. Right. You may put it right into the trash, but
you at least have to look at it.
You're pulling it out, you actually have to touch it. And so is that the value of junk mail still?
Mm-hmm. Likely. I mean, it's effective. They're spending the money on it for a reason.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with where we do business. You know, if you shop at a department store, a lot of those mailers are coupons, you know, to hit the big sale this weekend or whatever. So, yeah, I think there's going to be. And so in that case, it's not really junk mail. Some of it is, but a lot of it has a value, and which is why people respond to it. That response gives it that value. There you have it.
Some of my junk mail my neighbors want. I use the coupons. If you
do you
keep the coupons?
My wife and a friend of hers, same thing. It's like, well, we're not going to be in town, but I know, you know, my friend will want it. So, yeah.
But our original point, mm-hmm. that by 2033,
no interwebs.
There's not going to be any interruption in internet service. So stop it.
Look,
it's ridiculous.
Well, and that's the other thing. Fiber optics, you know, that certainly is. Or you look at, I mean, the cables that are buried in that actually is the conduit of the internet. I'm guessing there's probably going to be some type of overhaul of that as it ages anyway. And I don't know what that will be. Sky Broadcasting in the UK, they're not going to, they said, we're not going to on our dish service, our satellite dish service. It's going to be internet based. We're going to phase out all of our satellites. It's going to be internet based only. So, you know, I'm sure the infrastructure, as the demand for and the types of things that we stream and everything else.
But in 2023, what's the infrastructure going to look like when we have 9G?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Not 4G, not 5G,
yeah,
not
that's
6G,
my point.
Not 7G.
It's going to have an aging infrastructure that's taking on a larger role in people's lives and businesses is likely going to be redesigned, I'm guessing, by long before 2033. I'm just guessing.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, before we finish this hour, let's get to a James Comey tweet from yesterday.
Okay.
All right, are you ready?
And now
our James Comey tweet of the day.
Okay.
The Republican Congress has proven incapable of fulfilling the founders' design that ambition must counteract ambition. All who believe in this country's values must vote for Democrats this fall. Policy differences don't matter right now. History has its eyes on us.
The look in your face. Does he drink? You think he drinks?
I don't know.
He's just making it up.
I know.
You know what? He thinks that was one of the most brilliant tweets.
Prolific things ever.
Ever
in his
written.
In the James Comey arrogance.
History has its eye on us.
History has its eyes on us.
Okay, then.
The Republican Congress has proven incapable of fulfilling the founders' design that, quote, ambition must counteract ambition, end of quote. Could you please explain, since you're putting out a tweet, could you please explain, James, what the hell that actually means?
You mean,
what's your point, James?
Oh, do you mean, like Peter Strzok, his ambition was countering Trump's ambition to be president? Like that? Is that what you mean?
Oh, that's what was he?
Oh,
that,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh. No, I get it.
So this is
it.
An anti-Peter Strzok.
Yeah.
Oh, anti-Peter Strzok.
Oh, you mean
Strzok
like
tweet.
Hillary campaign and the DNC paying a foreign national, you know, through their lawyers to get dirt on unverified dirt on Donald Trump, the opposition. Like, so that was her ambition, you know, working against his ambition, that kind of thing? Oh, okay, yeah. I get it.
What a blowhard. Seriously.
He really believes that was good. You know what he's doing? He's up right now looking at that tweet going, oh, man, that's a good one. I'm going to frame
that
one.
Wow, I'm really good.
Oh, I'm so good. Man, look at that.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley. In the news today...
In a key sentence in my remarks, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't or why it wouldn't be Russia. So, just to repeat it, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. And the sentence should have been, and I thought it would be maybe a little bit unclear on the transcript or unclear on the actual video. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be Russia. Sort of a double negative.
Would, Jerry. Would.
Okay. So I can think of right. That. Okay.
We had a long discussion on that.
Yeah,
I don't know whether I want to start with that one or go back to the. I'll say this. I mean, I can sort of justify the other story as a lead story because Fox has it as their lead story.
Yeah, which one?
Ex FBI head urges Americans to abandon GOP. Warns that history has its eyes on us. We just did it before the top of the hour.
Yeah.
In case you're just tuning in right now.
Yeah.
The tweet from James Comey yesterday. Yeah. So if Fox has it on, I can justify it. It's their lead story on their website. Because we all care what James Comey thinks.
Yeah. He's so influential.
I want to read
according
one
to James Comey, he is.
I want to read it one more time.
Yeah.
Okay. The Republican Congress has proven incapable of fulfilling the founders' design that, quote, ambition must counteract ambition, end of quote. All who believe in this country's values must vote for Democrats this fall. Policy differences don't matter right now. History has its eyes on us.
Policy differences don't matter now. They always matter. When do they not matter?
And you're right. I do think that he's up right now.
Looking at that tweet
over and over again. Man, am I really good. I'm just really great.
He's showing it to his wife. Honey, look. Did you see it? Did you see my tweet? Look. Check it out. I wrote that.
Honey, I am keeping up the great tradition of ex-FBI leaders by tweeting this out.
Yeah. Look, I wrote that all by myself.
Now, we did analyze this and believe that when he said ambition must counteract ambition, this is an anti-Peter Strzok.
Yeah, it is. We
That's
think that is
speak.
Throwing
yeah.
his former colleague at the FBI under the proverbial bus because ambition must counter ambition in the way that Peter Strzok looked to counter with his ambition, looked to counter the ambition of one Donald J. Trump, whose ambition led him to run for president of the United States, or possibly, and I think likely, including to the DNC and the Hillary campaign and how ambitious they were in stopping trying to stop Donald Trump by funneling money through a law firm to a foreign national to get unverified information from the Russians on Donald Trump. See, their ambition countering his ambition. You know, that's all about.
I think I'd rather read this tweet five times and listen to you say that again.
Yeah. I mean, I clearly that's what he means. let's say you're FBI director. Not that this is related or relevant in any way, but let's just say you're the FBI director and you get fired by your, the president and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, because the president had the ambition to fire you, and now your ambition drives you to take a bunch of documents to your professor friend and leak it. You know, that's ambition countering ambition.
When I read that tweet, it just reinforces in my mind what you and I said on July 5th, 2016.
He's weird.
He's odd.
He's just a weirdo.
He's just odd.
He really is a strange person.
He really is and we had talked about it way back then, saying he doesn't seem to have the ability to connect logical dots together.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, the president is a bit of a character himself, right? I mean, he's just a character,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
So he's a very large personality, but, you know, kind of a character. But Comey's not a character. He's just weird.
Yeah.
He's just odd.
Every time I see him speak, every time I see him explain something, I look at him and say, he's just odd in some way.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, when Peter Strzok was giving his testimony, I came in and I said, looked at you and said, did you, you know, Comey and Strzok, did you notice that they sort of have the same odd way of presenting things, and you're like, yes.
Well, that's weird, odd. I mean, we broke it down into the language they used. They weren't using what we thought would be, you know, the language that you would normally hear investigators or investigative minds use.
Right.
With that kind of experience, you can often hear their own lingo. I mean, certain words you're listening for that, and we didn't hear that, but. You know, beyond that, we also saw that the weird smirks, the odd looks. And then, of course, with Strzok, it was the anger. That was very clear. So we would say to Mr. Comey, your former colleague is still showing his ambition. And he did so while testifying before Congress. And you did, too, by going out and writing a book. A weird, odd book. It's just creepy.
I just love policy differences don't matter right now. Mm-hmm. Then what does? And what Democrat should we vote for, Mr. Comey, that provides us with the values that we want in a president? Could you please explain that to me?
Right.
Which one?
Because
and by the way, based on the policy issues that they also support, you
right.
can also learn the person's values, just so you know.
Well, let's just say Hillary decided to run, again for Senate or something, and she were running this fall. I don't think any reasonable voter would vote for her.
Well, as we said earlier, the new survey that's out, 73% of Democrats, the Rasmussen poll, want a fresh face. They don't want Hillary. Back when Hillary ran, it was only 36%, I believe, mm-hmm. that wanted a new face. Now 73% of Democrats, you know, had the stories this week. Well, you know, Hillary, she could run again. I mean,
right. That's been
circulating.
We think
she's being prepared to run again. We've heard about, Biden wanting to run, mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders wanting to run again. So what are we down to? The Democrats want Cory Booker or Kamala Harris? Or will... Cortez out of New York go from a congresswoman to the presidential campaign in 2020.
Yeah, you saw where Lieberman is saying, hey, you guys need to abandon this candidate here. needs to change here.
Wait a minute. Yeah. All of a sudden, moderate Lieberman comes out of nowhere.
Exactly. That's the first thing I thought. Where's he been? But because she's not doing well on the interview circuit.
Yeah, it was in a scorching article for the Wall Street Journal, Lieberman Now and Independent criticize Cortez's agenda as more socialist than democratic. Joe, you've been gone too long.
You have.
You need to pay. And I understand you had the article in the Wall Street Journal, and I understand that you were a legislator for a long time that actually had on the issue some opinions that conservatives even agreed with.
Sure.
We understand that.
I have no disrespect for the man.
But the fact is, you have shown how long you've been gone when you say that Cortez's agenda is more socialist than democratic. As if that's now a minor, or that being a socialist and not a Democrat is a minority and a fringe view of the current Democrat Party.
Yeah. It's, and I don't know how many of those voters care how well she does on the interview circuit or how well or she does or doesn't do. On debate stages, I don't know if they care in that district. I really don't.
No, they do. From what I know, you're going to have a certain segment that will vote for her. She can promote and say, look, Trump was wishy-washy on it.
Mm-hmm.
I really love Putin because he's closer to the socialist communist view that I want.
Yeah.
So, you know, forget about Trump. Mm-hmm. Trump actually doesn't like Putin. Trump is a capitalist. He's proven he's a capitalist. I love Putin.
Yes.
And all of a sudden her popularity in the 14th district has gone to 99%.
Or 104.
104%, right. Well, you know, it's a communist doing the
voting. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Or doing the tallying of the vote.
Yeah.
So. But no, she's the interview that she did, firing line. I mean, she's really, really bad on a couple of things. Had no idea how the unemployment rate was figured out. She goes, well, the unemployment rate's low because a lot of people have two jobs. Mm-hmm. The unemployment rate isn't figured out by how many jobs people have. I mean, it's just she's completely and totally clueless. She is a bartender.
Hey, I know some smart bartenders.
Seriously, when I saw it, I went, oh. She's the kind of bartender that I she's the kind of bartender that you might see out there, mm-hmm. who is having some conversation with people, but we don't really get to the depth of it. She's clueless on the issues. She really doesn't know. And you know, on the Israel thing with the occupation, she got burned big time. What do you mean Israel is occupying the Palestinians? Well, go back to the occupying. Well, I'm not an expert on that. Then you should have shut up and not said
then
anything.
Don't comment on it, man. Next thing you know, she'll be working for Mueller.
All right. Now, on the president yesterday and his explanation.
Yeah.
We went through it in detail. We'll be nice and short here. The president did not misspeak. In my opinion, the president so infuriated about the fact that the media is still obsessed that he colluded with the Russians to hack or change the outcome of the election. He knows he didn't do it, and he got angry. Now, as we brought you the Bloomberg article, the president, apparently according to Bloomberg, was the one who approved the names of the 12 men being indicted. He wanted to challenge Putin on that. That was the goal of the White House. That was the story that we brought you yesterday. He wanted to challenge Putin. That was the goal. What went wrong? The only thing I can think that went wrong is they got to him. They finally got to him, and he's so angry that he blurted that out. I don't believe it was a misspeak. I don't believe that he trusts Putin more than his own intelligence people. We're talking about his intelligence people, not Obama's intelligence people, that he believes them. I believe, though, he is so upset at the entire thing that he just said it. And I'm sure, I think, regretted it afterwards, but the explanation he gave was painful to watch.
Yeah, it was painful.
It was painful. Yeah. Painful every time we have to listen to it, because that's not what happened. And as we said earlier, he should have just been honest. Look, I've been pounded on this for the longest time, that I colluded You know, that I've committed treason, and I'm just sick of it.
I let my emotions get the best of me, and they carried that comment, and obviously I don't support Putin over our intelligence community, but some of the leadership in the intelligence community certainly has failed us, and in some ways is still failing us today. Beyond that, I think I can be clear. I don't support Putin. We will hold them accountable. End of story.
But he had to get in front of it somehow, and he did. And where he goes from here, I don't know, because as I think Andrew McCarthy pointed out in National Review, now the Democrats aren't going to get off the fact that, come on, he didn't misspeak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the explanation wasn't, his explanation wasn't believable.
No, it's not believable is because he doesn't need to do that. He's not the guy to do that. Now, he is one to go, you know what? Okay, I was blowing a little smoke. He even said, he kind of alluded to that side of him in Singapore. In his standalone press conference, you know, he was joking with the media on one issue, and he goes, you know, I mean, a year from now, I could look back at this, you know, and say, okay, it didn't work out, you know, and it didn't come to fruition. And I'll probably, as you guys know, make up another excuse for that.
Right.
See, that was self-deprecating humor in that setting, but also that's him kind of being blunt, and he's best at that. He could have easily come out and said, you know what? Honestly, the emotion of this entire thing hanging on me since before I became president, before I was sworn in, with no basis in that setting, got the best of me. Those emotions carried that comment. It was wrong for me to say that. That's not how I feel. How I feel is this. And we can move on now. Be done. And that would have been believable. A faux pas is one thing. A bad correction of that faux pas. Again, it's not even his. I don't believe he owned that that correction from yesterday. I think somebody directed him to do that. I don't know who it was, but that's not out of his playbook.
866-90-RED-EYE.
It's a new way to finance water restoration projects in our nation's forest. And it's on display in California's Tahoe National Forest, where the U.S. Forest Service, along with public and private stakeholders, are bonding in this effort.
And the Forest Resilience Bond is an innovative way to bring all of those groups together. And if they each pay a little bit, you can actually get a lot of work done.
And Todd Gardner of the World Resources Institute says why this type of financing can be called a bond is...
We're actually using private capital up front. Foundations, insurance companies, family offices, different types of investors are providing the money up front. And then the Forest Service, water and electric utilities, companies are paying back that investor, but over a longer period of time. So the work gets done now, and then the payback happens over a longer period of time, and we dramatically reduce the likelihood and impacts of fire. Really a win-win situation.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. The most stressed cities, based on a new study out, based on annual hours in traffic congestion.
Oh, man.
The unemployment rate, divorce rate, and share of adults in fair or poor health. The most stressed cities, Detroit, Newark, Cleveland, Birmingham, Alabama, Toledo, Baltimore, Wilmington, Delaware, Milwaukee, Gulfport, Mississippi, and St. Louis.
Hmm.
The least stressed cities, Fremont, California, Bismarck, North Dakota.
And for Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
Dangerous heat in the western and southern U.S. yesterday will start to moderate somewhat. A cooling trend will begin today. Excessive heat warnings are in effect for northern California and southwestern Oregon today. Heat advisories cover parts of the central and plains and lower Mississippi Valley. Dry and hot over Texas today. Mainly dry across the Midwest from Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, down into portions of the Tennessee Valley. As you move southward toward the Gulf, though, you start to pick up some showers, mainly south of I-20 along I-10 from New Orleans over to Jacksonville. And then some showers we had yesterday will begin moving off the East Coast, but not first before hitting portions of New Jersey, extending toward Boston. Two areas of the country will see the greatest rainfall over the next 7 days, the Central Plains, Nebraska and Iowa, and the southeastern U.S. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
To have the conversation, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. I just want to read from just a little a portion of this article here. We had done this earlier in the show, but it's just really important to note what the president's mindset was before the summit, because it's information that I suspect that most people don't know. But President Trump, according to a Bloomberg article, chose to have the indictments of 12 Russian hackers announced before his Helsinki summit with Putin, according to a Tuesday Bloomberg report. Trump wanted the indictments announced ahead of the Monday summit to give him leverage over Putin, a source familiar with the matter told Bloomberg on Tuesday. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein gave Trump the option of having the indictments released before or after Helsinki, according to the report. Rosenstein cited national security concerns to allow him to share details of grand jury proceedings with Trump. Rosenstein announced Friday that a grand jury had indicted 12 Russian intelligence operatives for hacking and releasing Democrat emails during the 2016 presidential election. The important part of this is to understand what the president's mindset was. You know, you hear the Democrats screaming. Brennan, the ridiculous thing of treason, and I love Dershowitz on it. You're allowed to say you don't believe your intelligence agencies. That's not an impeachable offense. You're allowed to say I agree with the opinion of a foreign leader, any foreign leader. Those are not impeachable offenses. And when asked, well, what's an impeachable offense? He said, well, bribery. And I'm paraphrasing here, but he said bribery, or, for example, remember when Trump during the campaign said, I could go out and kill somebody on the street and people would still vote for me. Dershowitz said, most likely
there's a
pretty good chance if he actually would do that on a street that he would be put up for impeachment. It was hilarious.
Pretty good chance.
But I thought it's important so people could understand the mindset, because people said, well, you know, why did he do it? And we tried to give background on yesterday's show. Well, we didn't try. We did. And some of the background that was coming out at that time, that what the president did on stage was not what the president wanted to do, what anybody in the White House wanted to happen on that stage. In fact, according to the sources from the White House, the president wanted to go up and challenge Putin. It just didn't happen that way. And so people say, why did it happen that way? Was it because he was, he misspoke? I believe it was the fact of just being enraged, because he knows and he believes in his heart, I didn't collude with the Russians to hack the election. And after a year and a half, it got to him on stage.
Yeah.
I think his emotions got the best of him. Why, I don't know. But from all the reports that we get in this Bloomberg report, ads, more to the evidence, more reports coming out yesterday from the White House. This isn't what it was supposed to happen. The NATO summit and what the president got the other European countries to do of a matter of substance, to always challenge the Russians. Well, you can't make the case, as the Democrats are attempting to do, that he's in the back pocket of Putin.
Mm-hmm.
The substance of what's going on doesn't make there. It wouldn't make any kind of sense whatsoever. And who else said it yesterday? Who said that? What Democrats said they had something that he has something on Putin, that Putin has something on him. Who was it who said that?
Oh, I don't know, but that was the left narrative going on for the last, you know, well, since the Helsinki incident, as we call it.
The hell incident.
Yeah.
H-E-L. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Just a little background.
Well, it's odd. The, you know, the Bloomberg story. The fact that John Bolton didn't mention that on Sunday morning, and the fact that the president hasn't mentioned it,
right?
Because I think actually both Bolton saying it on Sunday morning on ABC This Week, when he was actually asked the question, "Do you think this was the president blindsided?" You know, did essentially the idea behind the question, did this throw the president off his game? And that would have been a great answer from the National Security Advisor, Mr. Bolton, saying, hey, the president, you should know the president actually, he was given a choice before or after, and the president chose before for a reason, because he wants to address this directly with Putin while he's there. That would have been a great answer. And the president bringing it up, none of this is jiving, and we really don't. We have no idea why.
Now, we said this earlier that, again, this is only from Bloomberg is where we have seen this story. But it is a source story that is complimentary of the president, so it could be true.
Right, exactly. There's a greater likelihood of
truth. Right. A greater likelihood could be true because this source story doesn't hurt the president. But, no, I get my serious point is, if this is true, somebody really screwed up in the White House, because this should have been talked about on a consistent basis. And when they ask if anybody asks if you're surprised, right? In the communications department, this is what you talk about. What's our message? What's our narrative? Our narrative is going to be, when it comes up, well, was the president taken aback by this? Well, no, the president authorized it. In fact, I would have Friday said, if this story is true, we need to get out there and say, when this comes out and the questions are asked, was the president surprised? Well, we need to come out and say, the president authorized this to come out at this time. It was the president's choice. Deputy attorney general came to him and said, we'll either do it after or before. We don't want this. We don't want politics to be involved in this, because originally, the statement was that the narrative was, well, Rosenstein did this in order to screw up Trump's summit.
Mm-hmm.
If the Bloomberg story is true, no, that fits the other narrative, which is Trump wanted this information out so he could challenge Putin on stage. And that was always from this other stories that the Wall Street Journal and others came up with yesterday before this story came out, that the aides inside the White House were shocked. It wasn't the way what was supposed to happen on that stage whatsoever. So what happened? Well, what was the background? What was the mindset of the administration? What was the mindset of the president? And this is the background that gives you the mindset of the president and the administration at that point, where it looks like the whole goal, if this story is true, it adds to the evidence that the goal was to challenge him. It just didn't happen. Challenge Putin, I mean.
Well, and I'm wondering why the president didn't tweet that and brag about that.
You're right. It's another great point.
Because he actually referred to the witch hunt on Friday when he tweeted after the news of the indictments hit. Why would he not tweet about that? You know, why would he not come out and say, hey, I had a great conversation with Rod Rosenstein, and I chose, or I told Rod Rosenstein to release these indictments ahead of Helsinki for a reason.
The other story I want to make sure that I get in, we have a short audio cut here. It was on Fox News yesterday, and they did a story talking about the fact that Representative John Ratcliffe, who was in the interview with Lisa Page, said that Lisa Page contradicted many parts of the testimony of Peter Strzok. And I find this fascinating, if true. Now, I knew something probably was going on because as you had, when it was over, it started immediately that Republicans were very, very pleased with the testimony of Lisa Page and called it refreshing. Mm-hmm. But here was Representative John Ratcliffe when he was asked about Lisa Page and her testimony.
There are differences in their testimony. In many cases, she admits that the text messages mean exactly what they say, as opposed to Agent Strzok, who thinks that we've all misinterpreted his own words on any text message that might be negative.
There you go. Hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Lover spat?
I was going to say, man, I'm telling you, we're thinking the exact same way. That's scary.
Yeah, because, first of all, I think it's very apparent. If you look at it, if you look at the content of those text messages, there's nothing to be lost. There's no reading between the lines. Words have meaning. We saw his anger still playing out while he was testifying, Strzok. He was motivated to act that way, and still is, I believe. It's just harder to do it from human resources. Or
right,
the sidelines where he is now.
Right, because he's on the sidelines mm-hmm. now. Paid?
As far as we know, he's still being paid, right?
As far as I know, yeah, it's a paid leave.
Right.
All right, we're going to have to examine this story here.
We didn't
talk about it much today. All you right. know, the Fed chairman yesterday backing more rate hikes. At the same time, talking about the fact of the fear of the what's going to happen with growth because of the tariffs.
Right.
Now, again, the majority of the huge tariffs don't go into effect for another 2 or 3 months. If you're talking about the major huge tariffs against the $200 billion, they're still months away. The other tariffs will be kicking in, though, here sooner. But the fact is he's backing more rate hikes now. Because the second quarter looks like it's going to do good. The second quarter, everybody seems to be talking around 4% growth. Well, a combination, here's my worry, combination of more rate hikes and the tariffs hit at the same time.
Yeah.
That would be my concern for the latter part of this year, probably going into the fourth quarter and first quarter of next year, if we have 2 or 3 rate hikes and then the impacts of the tariffs start hitting the economy. That won't be good.
Well, and that's the question. What consideration will there be by the Fed for that kind of, the effect from, negative effect on the economy from the tariffs?
And he did mention the tariffs mm-hmm. and the concern. So if it's on his, you would think if it's on Powell's plate, if he's mentioning it, then it means that has to affect the maybe the amount of the rate hikes.
Well, I think it would be because you would also have to factor in what he can't possibly factor in, and that's the unpredictable nature of the president. So I guess the question would be, is the president, how long will these tariffs go on? Is the president going to hold his ground for a long time? Or do we believe that, you know, we're safe to go ahead with a rate hike because we believe they're going to be short-lived. Mm-hmm. And trying to make that prediction is probably not a good idea.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This engine report is brought to you by Detroit. The DD15 is designed to provide its peak power and torque between 1,000 and 1,500 RPMs. This fuel economy sweet spot means there isn't much more power available at 1,800 RPM than at 1,400. The only thing being accomplished is burning more fuel without any real benefit. While cruising, try to keep the engine between 1,050 and 1,450 RPMs for maximum efficiency. Also, upshift around 1,650 RPMs or sooner to stay in the sweet spot. Speed is the enemy of fuel economy. On average, every 1 mile per hour increase in road speed above 55 costs 0.1 mpg, which adds up by the mile. Cruising in the high 50 to low 60 mph range can help you get the most out of every gallon of fuel. Ultimately, traffic on surface roads and stoplights will impact travel time far more than a few mph on the highway.
For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. We'll talk more, I'm sure, in the upcoming days, because we love talking monopolies, or the when the courts get involved, or other countries get involved in trying to figure out what's a monopoly or not. The EU is expected, here's a headline, EU is expected to fine Google a record $5 billion over antitrust abuse. Android is a part of it, too.
Right.
Over Android, in fact, it's supposed to be the $5 billion is over Android and their dominating operating system.
Well, their dominating operating system dominated how? Because just because people choose it and the majority of people choose it doesn't mean that does not in and of itself constitute a monopoly. If it's the best and the majority decide to use it that way, that's not a monopoly. If there are choices available in the marketplace and competition in the marketplace, again, no monopoly.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.